Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia Duster. Shockingly affordable, and now with 3 months deferred payments too.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Some of the reaction to the Mary Claire, who we were just talking to about our chest feeding technology, which is a system whereby men can breastfeed. Dee says, is the hormone called Dom Perignon? I'm okay with that. I don't think it is. Someone else says, my God, your guests are getting weirder and way out there. Ben says, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. The world really is going crazy. And someone else says, something like this is going to cause the apocalypse. That might be a wee bit of an overreaction, especially when you consider that now it's time for our international news slot, where far worse things that might cause the apocalypse are going on, though we don't tend to hear it so much. Shane Hannan joins us this week on News Talk. Good afternoon, Shane.
Afternoon, Sean.
I congratulate you for bringing us a planning row in Iran. I think it's the first time we've covered one of them. Tell us about this this mountain, Mount Damavand. Why is it significant?
Yeah, so your texter said guests are getting weirder and way out there. Hopefully, they must have known I was coming up next. But no, this mountain is quite significant, actually, Sean, in Persian mythology. So it is the tallest peak in Iran. It's a potentially active volcano. So it's 5,600 meters, just a couple of hundred meters shy of what Mount Kilimanjaro is. So highest peak in Iran, the highest volcano in Asia. But it's quite well known in Persian mythology. So this heroic archer, Arash Kamanjir, is said to have fired an arrow to the peak of this mountain, warding off invaders, you know, and securing the future of an empire. So it plays quite a significant role in Iranian society. But now they're being, it's kind of at the center of a row in Iran at the moment. So there's talk of wanting to turn some of the historic lands around this mountain into luxury villas. So clearly some people are not too happy with this, and it's taken over the news waves in Iran at the moment. So this powerful religious agency, Aukaf, which answers to Iran's supreme leader, has obtained an endowment deed for one of these 11 parcels of land that they make up the mountain area. So they haven't done it in the best way. So local media are reporting that they want the mountain to be cut up into different slices like a cake, essentially, and bulldozed, replaced with luxury hotels and villas. So as you can imagine, lots of anger among prominent Iranians and, you know, people as high up as the country's vice president, saying that no one, not even the supreme leader, should be allowed to use the land for commercial affairs. So quite a controversial one, to say the least.
Is it a kind of a dispute between secular and religious then? But it seems like the religious people are the people who are doing something secular, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the religious agent. It's this religious agency which answers to the supreme leader are the ones who have got this endowment deed. So it's a complicated one in that sense when you bring religion into it, especially in a country like Iran. But it's a mountain that's constantly in the news. People often realize that Iran have earthquakes quite commonly. So they've had flash floods around Mount Damavand in recent years. The last known eruption of this volcano happened 5,300 BC. So we shouldn't be at risk of it happening anytime soon.
Okay.
But there has been different issues around it in recent years. And the earthquakes in the area probably add to it as well. So there are other issues coming up in Iran. I mean, they have a gated community called Basti Hills, which is essentially Iran's answer to Beverly Hills, which has their own case of bribery of a former judiciary official. So loads of different issues of bribery and money laundering happening in Iran at the moment. So it's a complicated one. And yeah, clerics getting involved, religion getting involved. So a bit of a nasty news story in Iran.
But I won't do much to settle an already significant amount of discontent among the public in Iran. Okay, we're going to go to Sudan next. Kind of a similar story, I suppose. This is an ancient site, but is there gold there?
Yeah, a bit of a theme here of humans doing stupid things this afternoon. But yeah, illegal gold diggers essentially destroying a 2,000-year-old archaeological site. This is in Sudan, in the eastern region of the Sahara Desert. So it's called the Jabal Maraga, which dates from the Meroitic period. So this is between 350 BC and 350 AD. It was said to have been some sort of a small settlement or a checkpoint. But officials from Sudan's Antiquities and Museums Department saying, when they visited the site last month, this is only coming to light though this week, they found two mechanical diggers and five men at work. So brazen as you like, but they had excavated a vast trench. So I've seen the photos online, but 17 meters deep, 20 meters long, searching for this gold. So, I mean, Sudan is Africa's third largest producer of gold after South Africa and Ghana. So it brings in about $1.2 billion to the government annually. So illegal mining, of course, said to be encouraged by some local authorities and businessmen who gave the machines to treasure hunters. So clearly money is given to them to go out and do these deeds. But the problem, I think, Sean, in Sudan is that there's not much dissuasion. The enforcement of these laws is just not stringent. The diggers who destroyed this Jabal Malaika last year were freed without charge. Not clear why, but a lot of people in Sudan's Antiquities Department clearly upset with that. And yeah, if people are being let off for digging up gold and destroying archaeological sites, then you know, it's not showing any signs of stopping anytime soon.
And I suppose perhaps they're given it Sudan, there are other priorities there. Sudan is full of these ancient sites, though, isn't it?
Yeah, big time. Hundreds and hundreds of pyramids and other ancient sites, though probably not as well known as Egypt, of course. But, you know, it's something that comes up quite a bit. And we don't hear about Sudan's archaeological sites too often. They have one called At-Sai, which is a 12-kilometer long river island in the Nile. Hundreds of graves, some dating back to the time of the pharaohs. They've been raided, destroyed by looters. So it's happened before. And then again, the lack of security at these sites make them quite an easy target for looters. In Egypt, I guess, because they're so well known, they are protected somewhat by security. But in Sudan, they're just out there in the wilderness and out in the eastern Sahara Desert, as it is here in Sudan. So they can be targeted by looters.
Mm-hmm. Now, right, Madagascar we're going to go to next, where a prison breakout resulted in 20 deaths.
A bit of a mad one this from Sunday. So this was 20 inmates killed in a shootout with police during this prison breakout in Madagascar, as you mentioned. So this started off as a riot, essentially. Inmates split into two groups in this prison. It's the Farafangana prison in the southeast of Madagascar, of course, an Indian Ocean island. The inmates split into two groups. One side attacked the guards and the other forcing a passageway through the prison's toilets to escape, straight out of Shawshank Redemption. Hmm. But some inmates threw stones at the guards, seized one of their guns, and then it got really nasty. And of course, the guards fought back. 37 of the 88 who managed to escape were captured by the police and army. 8 were wounded in the shootout, some of them seriously. But yeah, as you mentioned, 20 inmates killed in this. 31 inmates, as of now, are still on the run, according to the ministry in Madagascar. So they're vowing to boost their security in jails across the country. But it has to be said, this is not an uncommon thing for Madagascar, and mass prison escapes happen there quite often. I mean, in 2016, 40 detainees broke out of a high-security prison in the south of the country. It's common. I mean, Amnesty International had a report back in 2018 of the conditions in prisons there, and you know, people accused of crimes routinely put in prison pending trial, and they can wait there for years with little or no information on their cases. So quite a sad story, but something that's unfortunately very common in Madagascar, Sean.
Yeah, and an ongoing problem, I suppose, with the legal system there. Right, Japan we're going to go to next, and this is a very COVID story, I assume. They're running out of credit card numbers.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, this. You'd think, like, Japan, I think of Japan as a country very far ahead in technology, and it seems quite strange to me that a country that has a module on the International Space Station is still quite reticent to move towards a cashless society. So this is a strange one, as you mentioned, clearly COVID-linked, because some of the figures I dug out, ATM withdrawals in the UK, I haven't found any for Ireland at the moment, but the ATM withdrawals over there across the English Channel have dived as much as 57% during the lockdown. So 23.6 million withdrawals made from the machines in the week ending May 3rd of this year. That's down considerably from the 55 million made the same week last year. And the amount that people are taking out is also way down. Clearly, people have these hygiene concerns. They don't want to be handling cash if they can avoid it. And I know a lot of shops here in Ireland, and some of your listeners will attest to this, that they just don't accept cash at the moment, and they prefer to move towards cards. But yeah, Japan, unfortunately for them right now, they're lagging behind in this cashless shift. But the Prime Minister, Shinzo Abe, is hoping to double usage to 40% within the next 5 years. Now, the problem you mentioned, Sean, about the digit shortage, this is a strange one. So the first 6 digits on a credit card indicate the country, brand and other details, and then the last 10 are determined by the issuer. So the rush of new cards means there's a shortage of combinations from the 7th digit onwards. So most Japanese banks are providing cards with 16 digits to help them partner with international transaction giants, big books like Visa and MasterCard. So the problem is the digit shortage, the large growth in people now heading towards cards, and simply not enough numbers for them to hand out.
Or combinations of numbers, I assume. I was just looking at mine. Yeah, there's 16 numbers on it. It's hard to imagine how they could run out of numbers. I thought we had an infinite supply of them, or at least a rather large supply.
Yeah, and different people, there was a credit card industry sources quoted in different pieces I read on this, and they're saying there'll likely be a shift toward increasing the number of digits in the first half of this decade. So I'm with you. I thought, look, 16 digits, surely enough to come up with enough combinations to make this not a problem. But clearly it is, and in a country like Japan, hopefully they'll sort it out fairly quickly, because clearly the population are moving massively towards towards credit cards.
Or they have to introduce like foot-long credit cards to accommodate all the numbers on them. Right, yeah. Dubai we're going to go to next. And people, is this for immigrants or for whom that they're wearing these bracelets?
It seems to be for workers generally in the United Arab Emirates. So I was talking to my family about this last night, a bit of debate about whether this was ridiculous or a great idea. I actually think it makes a lot of sense. So it's essentially being introduced in Dubai. So a company, one particular company, introducing color-coded bracelets for workers to show how they want to be greeted. So again, clearly linked to COVID and people's comfortability or otherwise with speaking up close with other people. But it's a traffic light system. So it shows other employees how comfortable each person is with physical contact, with small bits of chit-chat. Clearly among COVID, this is the Create media group. So almost 100 staff returning to this company. They can choose between three different colors in a traffic light system. So it alerts their colleagues then on their comfort level with being greeted. So green, of course, happy to have a quick chat. Yellow, a little bit cautious and keep your distance. Don't stay for too long. And then red, basically piss off and leave me alone, essentially. So it's a strange one, but one that you might see take off over here. And look, COVID cases in the UAE have risen quite sharply in recent days. They're up on 67,000. Mm-hmm. They announced 275 new cases yesterday. So a little bit higher even than here. So there's talk of even overnight curfews in areas of the United Arab Emirates in the next few days. So it's clearly a country that wants to get up and running for their tourism. And maybe this is one idea that could help.
I can't see Irish people wearing a red bracelet saying, no, I won't talk to you. Even if they don't, they won't admit it. Right. Yeah. And finally, who knew? There are bears, or at least there were bears in Italy, and they're trying to reintroduce them. How's that going?
So this is an impassioned debate in Italy's Dolomites. So whether or not there are too many of these bears. So brown bears were once driven to the brink of extinction in Italy. They began then to be reintroduced from Slovenia in the 90s. And there's now a thriving population of around 70 adults in this Dolomites region. So attacks on humans are very rare, and the European brown bear is actually considered much less dangerous than the grizzly in North America, which can grow up to 900 pounds. So what triggered this debate over recent weeks was an attack on a police officer. So 24-year-old policeman on a walk late on Saturday evening at the weekend, prior to starting a night shift, and then the bear burst out of undergrowth near the village of Andalo in the northern region of Trentino, South Tyrol. The bear pinned him down, bit him, and raked his body with its claws before heading off into the woods. Thankfully, the officer was discharged and left hospital. But locals, unfortunately, said this had actually been coming, that the bear had become increasingly bold in recent weeks, ransacking rubbish bins, wandering into villages in search of food, which sometimes can be a sign of bears getting a little bit antagonized. It's only a two-year-old bear, captured by forest rangers a few hours after the attack and then taken to a wildlife enclosure near the city of Trento. So it's kind of started this debate, as you mentioned, Sean, about are there too many bears in the region? The head of the local government there saying there are now too many bears. The project has become unsustainable and dangerous. And then on the other side of the coin, you have conservation groups saying, look, numbers are not the problem, but the authorities' failure to manage relationships between bears and the humans is actually the problem, that bears need to become accustomed to being around people. So the conservationists pointing to North America, where people manage to freely coexist with bears, and you know, you have signs in national parks telling people to stay away, to avoid confrontation. Italy, in contrast, as they quoted, was in the Stone Age with its attitude to bears. So an interesting story.
Shane, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was Shane Hannan there. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We're going to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With the Dacia range. Drive away today with no payments for the first 3 months.